competitive frisbee called Ultimate has its roots here in the Delaware Valley. According to legend, it was started by Joel Silver in 1968 when he was a high school student in Maplewood, New Jersey. Today, there are teams all over the world, including the Philadelphia Spinners Major League Ultimate Team and the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance, known as PADA. So how did a recreational game popular among stoners and dogs become a team sport? And we have a trio of guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio, and let me introduce each of them to you. Tracy Berg is a longtime PADA member and ultimate player. She was the winner of the first PADA Summer League and is captain and played in almost every year since. She was a leader of the Philly Peppers and women's club teams throughout her career, and she's also a coach at Haverford High School for a girls' coach at Haverford High School. Tracy Berg, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're happy to have you here. Also with us is Rick Atkins, and he's won multiple summer leagues, world and national championships, serves as president of the board at PADA, also currently the program director, has been a guiding force for PADA since its inception, and he also coaches high school and runs camps for Ultimate. And Rick Atkins, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Nick Herenet, and he's captain of the Philadelphia Spinners Professional Ultimate Team. He's been the captain for three seasons. That's the whole time the season has been in existence, or I should say the team has been in existence, and he was the captain of the Ultimate Team at the University of Delaware. And Nick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So why is it called Ultimate? Can I put that first to you, Rick?
I suppose because it's the ultimate sport.
You don't want to use the word frisbee? Because I was talking to Emily, who produced this, and I said, I can't say ultimate on the air. No one knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
Is frisbee a word you can't use?
Well, frisbee is a trademark product of Wham-O, and we no longer use Wham-O products. So we use a disc craft for the most part.
So why not call it ultimate disc?
Well, we probably would, but then people wouldn't, as you say, then people wouldn't know what we were talking about.
Okay. So we should talk about ultimate. That's the word that everybody uses.
Yeah, I think ultimate, people are starting to get the hang of it, know what the ultimate is.
You've been playing how long, Tracy?
I've been playing for 31 years.
31 years.
Yeah.
Now, did you start as just a casual, you know, backyard summer picnic kind of player?
Actually, I started in college. I was at Kalamazoo College, and I was on the tennis team there, and I got mad at my coach one day and decided to go play with the ultimate players, and I learned how to play there.
So why'd you get mad at your tennis coach?
She changed my doubles partner, and I was like, oh, I've been playing with this girl for 2 years, and I'm going to go hang out with the frisbee players. I still play. I finished my tennis career there. But I signed up for a gym class in ultimate frisbee at Kalamazoo, and then I've been playing ever since.
Wow. How long have you been playing, Rick?
35 years now.
35 years. Yeah. And what was your start?
I started playing in college also at Penn. Had some good friends who played. I played, you know, sports in high school. But they decided not to at Penn. They started taking me out, and I was hooked right when I got
really?
Out.
Really? Why?
Oh, yeah. Why?
Why?
Because it's the ultimate sport. We already.
to be more descriptive. Why?
Oh, there's a lot of things. Camaraderie. One thing that's great about ultimate is that you're not limited by a certain position. Everybody throws, everybody catches, everybody plays defense. It's very free-flowing as opposed to, you know, very structured.
And for you, Nick, you're, shall we say, the next generation coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't been playing as many years as them, but
are you as old as they have been playing?
No. I've been playing for 12 years.
Okay.
I started going into my junior year of high school. My brother started playing, I guess, before that and at University of Delaware, and then he'd come back and show me all of his throws, and I was kind of mind blown to see that he could do what he could do with a disc, and that really, like Rick said, it just gets you hooked, you know. And I played my first competitive ultimate with PADA in the summer league.
Wow.
And it was, you know, it just gets you hooked almost immediately, like most people will tell you.
Well, I have to say, as someone who's, you know, thrown a frisbee around, I mean, there is something quite lovely about watching a frisbee, even badly thrown by someone like me, kind of floating, not as far as you guys throw, but floating through the air.
Absolutely. I, I don't want to sound feminine, but it is rather graceful to see a disc floating, and I think it really lends itself to some really entertaining things to watch. So the disc kind of floats out there, and you know a big play is coming. You know, if a deep throw goes up and two guys are chasing it down, it kind of sets the stage for something exciting to happen. So I think that's unique about it.
Well, Tracy, let me turn to you and actually to all three of you. I was looking at some YouTube videos of what Ultimate looks like, and I was seeing people beautifully throw a Frisbee from one end of the field, which I think is 110 yards.
Yeah,
like a football field.
70-yard field with 20-yard end zones.
Okay, so throwing it from one, I mean, literally from one end of the field to
right.
the other. Do you need to be strong to do that?
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm a pretty small person, and in women's ultimate, I was one of the people who could throw, you know, pretty far.
How far?
Not quite the full length of the field anymore, anyway. I know Rick can. But, yeah, one of our sayings is, this ain't no ball game. So being able to throw that far and have the Frisbee fly, like Neil said, yeah. lends to a lot of athletic endeavors.
Well, Rick, I'm curious, too, about, I mean, the various types of throws. Are there a lot of them?
There are several, and especially these days, people are getting more and more imaginative with coming up with different throws. But basically, you throw a backhand and a forehand, much like kind of tennis.
Right.
And the reason why you have to throw those two throws is because when there's someone guarding you, standing in front of you, stopping you from throwing. So you have to be able to throw from both sides of your body. But then people also throw overhead throws, more like a football, baseball throw. And as I say, then people are always coming up with new and innovative things that are really groovy.
Well, I'm looking at you, Nick. Do you have some new and groovy, innovative ways of throwing a
disc? Like Rick said, it is developing, and people are learning to throw new throws. And I guess one of the more popular throws is as a right-hander or left-hand, you throw your offhand. So I'm right-handed, and actually I'm coming off injury, so I had to learn how to throw
with my
left hand a little bit. So a lot of people in the game like to they're right-handed, but they'll throw a left-handed backhand, and that kind of throws off the mark a little bit because they're not used to it. But a lot of players are starting to get into that too. So,
had you hurt was it your thumb?
I actually heard it in an MLU game. It was a couple games before the end of the season, and I laid out or dove for a disc, and then my thumb kind of jammed in the ground, and I tore my UCL. So I had surgery, and I'm
and you're back.
I got off the splint actually on Monday, so you're seeing the first use of my thumb here as I drink from my mug.
But I would assume, a thumb is really important to Frisbee or throwing a disc.
Yeah. I mean, the grip is important on the disc. To be able to spin the disc, to be able to throw it far, you really need a grip has a lot to do with it. And like Tracy was saying, to throw discs really far, it's not always about the strongest guy. It's a lot about technique and about, you know, your grip and kind of little odds and ends.
Let's talk about how this works. And Tracy, I'll start with you. I mean, you described the field. It's what, 70 yards with 20 yards for the what?
End zones.
End
right.
zones.
So the way it works is one team pulls to another team. So a pull is like a kickoff in football. And the offensive team advances the Frisbee down the field without running with it, so you have to throw it to a teammate.
So if you have the Frisbee, you can't run with it, you have to throw it.
You have to stop, establish a pivot foot, and throw it to a teammate. And then ultimately you want to throw it to somebody in your end zone, and that's a goal.
And how many people on the team?
There are seven people on each side. Yeah.
And as you were saying, Rick, sort of everyone plays every position. Are there positions where they might be in soccer or hockey or something like that?
There are positions. I mean, you know, in general, you have your better throwers near the disc and your bigger, faster players catching goals. But that's, you know, loosely organized. You want to be able to, you know, you want everybody to have all different skills and be able to do different things on the field.
Is there a goalie?
Oh, no. No.
Basically
two different styles of defense. You can play person to person, so you're covering a person. Then you have when you're marking somebody, you have 10 seconds to throw. The thrower has 10 seconds to throw, counted out by the person who's marking them.
So if I'm marking you, for instance, you have the disc.
Disc.
I would count to 10, and you have got toss it
before that, or it's a turnover.
And it's described Nick as a non-contact sport. Is that true?
I would say it's
no. Tracy says no.
I mean we do have a fair share of contact. It's similar to, you know, soccer and basketball, where you're not really supposed to be tackling people like football or hitting people like in hockey. But of course, there's contact. There's body contact, especially when, you know, a disc goes up. You know, you guys are both vying for the disc, and there's certainly a lot of contact that way. And there certainly are a lot of injuries that happen. So
that's just sort of the way it is. Now, is there a referee? I know this might be some degree of controversy.
It's a really big part of our sport. It's self-officiated, and we have something that's called Spirit of the Game, and that basically means that you are going to play with integrity and honesty, and you know, try to make your calls honestly.
Fair.
And so we, in most of Ultimate, and this is a little different in the professional league, self-officiate. We make our own calls. So if somebody hits you and you could have gotten the frisbee, you call a foul. And then the defender can contest the foul, and they say, no, I didn't foul you. And then there are rules to...
And who decides then? I mean, if there's a disagreement.
So if somebody...
It gets interesting, right?
It does. And some people... like Spirit of the Game because they feel like they can discuss this. That's kind of one of my pet peeves. I don't think you need to discuss it. There's a set of rules. You call a foul, and if the person doesn't agree, they contest it. And if it's contested, it goes back to where it was originally thrown. So there's, you know, it's laid out so that it works.
Does it work, Rick?
I think it works. There is also something else, especially at the more important games.
Go ahead.
Observers that are not really referees. They do make some active calls, inbounds, out of bounds, because those are things that are a little bit hard for you to see. When you're catching a disc, it's a little hard for you to see what your first point of contact is. And then they also, in order to keep the game moving, they'll, if there is a dispute, you can go to an observer and they'll resolve it.
We're almost on a break here, but to you, Nick, now you play professional Ultimate. Are there referees?
There are referees in professional Ultimate.
And why?
Honestly, I think, you know, the main purpose is probably to – it becomes a spectator sport professionally, and people come to watch. And I think, like Tracy was saying, there's a set of rules, and if we just went by them, things would move along, I think, well. But obviously that doesn't happen all the time, and especially in high-level games, you get in kind of arguments, and a lot of time is spent kind of talking to each other and trying to talk it out. And, you know, if you're a fan watching, you probably don't want to watch two people argue. So I think at that point, for the professional league, it's kind of to take it out of the hands of the players and kind of keep the game moving. And I think that's appropriate for the game.
Well, we're talking about Ultimate. You might know it as Ultimate Frisbee. And we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Fringe Arts supports WHYY. The actual NASA-recorded sound of a deep space black hole can be heard when Fringe Arts presents The Four Seasons Restaurant, an unflinching drama by Italy's renowned director Romeo Castellucci. Compelling soundscapes and awe-inspiring visuals propel this theatrical look at the impact of absence on the human psyche. Presented now as part of the 2014 Fringe Festival. More at FringeArts.com. That's FringeArts.com.
This Week in This American Life.
You got to tighten up your story.
Our longtime producer Alex Bloomberg is trying to start his own business, and he is recording the entire awkward process, like when a billionaire investor who he's pitching gives up any pretense that he might invest and just starts coaching him.
We'll start again.
So
you're uniquely positioned to do it because you're better at it than anybody?
Yeah, I am.
I apologize for that.
Yeah. This Week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. You know the type, the guy who sees the merge right sign on the highway and stays in the left lane anyway to cut ahead.
While everybody else who's already in the lane that has merged looks to their left and growls and grimaces. But as it turns out, there are a lot of people who think that you actually should go all the way to the end.
That's the zipper merge. Then there's the jerk merge. We'll debate both next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Just a recap, over the past 40 years or so, Ultimate Frisbee, or Ultimate, has grown from a sport played by a few high school students in New Jersey to a sport played around the world. Here in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance, or PADA, is the region's ultimate frisbee hub, and it's celebrating its 29th year. It boasts hundreds of members and numerous leagues across the area. The city also has a three-year-old pro league, the Philadelphia Spinners, who compete with other major league ultimate teams from across the country. We are talking with Tracy Berg, a longtime member of PADA, also with Rick Atkins, a member of PADA as well. In fact, is their program director, and with Nick Harris, who's captain of the Philadelphia Spinners professional ultimate team. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscoen. And if you play ultimate, of course, we do want to hear from you. But Tracy, is there a controversy about referees, the idea of, I guess, bringing in someone from outside to referee a game and not relying so much on the spirit of the game?
It is a bit of a controversy that's been going on for probably the last 15 mm-hmm. years at the higher levels of ultimate. I've played in 16 national championships, so when you're at a national championship, it's a lot more competitive, and there are a lot more arguments, and sometimes people have a harder time sticking to the spirit of the game.
So you need a ref?
I don't think so, and especially in women's ultimate, it's not as prevalent as in men's, but kind of the way our organization has come to terms with that. Our overall organization is called USA Ultimate and USAU, and they run our national championships. And they pretty much have what Rick said as observers starting in the semifinals of a national championship. So that really helps because if you can't settle an argument, you can go to an observer.
I mean, if we say spirit of the game, and Rick, I'm looking at you, is it what we would expect it to be, which is good sportsmanship? I mean, learning how to be a good winner, a good loser, I mean, all the things that come with that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of it. I think the other thing is, especially on a youth level, it's empowerment. It's your game. So, for instance, when Tracy and I coach, we teach them, and can teach them skills and strategy, et cetera. But unlike, a basketball coach that is always telling people what calls should be made or whatever, we're prohibited from saying anything about any call that happens on the field. The only thing we can do is if you're asked by a player to clarify a rule, you can do that, but you can't give your opinion on anything. And again, that's because they're USA is being very serious about having that game belong to the youth.
Now, can coaches call plays, or is it really up to the players to?
No, you can call plays, but okay. You can't say anything about the rules.
I gotcha. Back to you, Nick, and because you do this professionally, can you make a living doing this professionally, by the way?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
I hope one day, but no, not quite yet.
And it is on ESPN, as I understand it.
We've made ESPN top 10 several times in every season, almost, you think about almost every week we were up there with some play. But we are on Comcast on Sundays and Mondays after games.
And are there cheerleaders at professional games?
We do have the Spinners have a dance team. Some other teams do or don't, but it's kind of up to the city.
Right. So, Tracy, how do you feel about cheerleaders? I'm looking at your face as it all,
yeah.
I think, but we're on the radio here.
Exactly. Well, coming from a women's club ultimate background, having this professional league, I mean, it's really a men's professional league. And, women are allowed to try out, but it's really the women's game is quite different than the men's, just like in basketball or soccer. So, yeah, to kind of have women represented in ultimate as
cheerleaders
is a little bothersome to me.
But is the game that different when women play it?
It is. It's a little more technique, probably more passes before you score a goal.
Why does that not surprise me?
Yeah. It's like women's soccer, And, it's a little less physical. So in a men's game, often you'll see a couple little passes and then a big pass all the way down the field and then two really tall guys going up and hitting each other and catching it. And it's thrilling, and sure, I love watching it as well. But with women, there's a lot more movement on the field. And
yeah. What about co-ed teams, Rick? How does that work?
A lot of times it works very well. It teaches you how to integrate other people into the game, and as Tracy says, instead of just throwing it to the real big tall guy, you have to learn how to throw it to all sorts of different people. And I'll tell you, it's interesting what Tracy was saying. Was I've always said for a long time that a lot of the better throwers in the game are women, because it's easier to throw it to a 6'6" guy who can jump really, really fast and jump really high. Whereas if you're throwing it to people who are in general a little bit slower, a little bit smaller, you have to be a better thrower.
Well, and again, going back to these YouTubes, I was looking at, Nick, I mean, just it's not just the distance, but also the timing. I mean, to be able to send a disc down a field and have someone just, in a perfect game, I guess, catch it and run into the goal.
Yeah, it really is one of those things that I love about the sport, is the ability to be able to throw the disc in so many different ways. You can throw, something overhead to get it there very quickly. You can throw something that floats when someone's running onto it. There's so many different ways to throw the disc that makes it really impressive and makes it really fun to play.
How many miles would you say you run during a game? Have you ever put one of those pedometers on?
I think I had heard that someone had for a tournament, which a tournament is usually like four games a day, Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, wow.
And they're about 2 hours each usually. And I don't know if you guys know anything about, but I think it may be, like running a marathon and running a tournament. I mean, you really do run a lot.
Like 25 miles or something like that? Or do you know?
I do not know the exact mileage, but somebody did do.
I've heard numbers. I couldn't really
get them. Numbers, right?
I think a lot would be
a
good number. But I think it also should be noted that while there's seven people playing a team, when you go to a tournament like Nationals, I believe the roster limit these days is 27 people. So there are a lot of people on a team. So you don't, and there's much more increased specialization these days. Some people just play offense, some people just play defense, and you really don't play as much. Back in the day, we'd go to tournaments with seven people.
Right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Hope nobody gets hurt.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. It looks like some folks want to join our conversation. We are talking about Ultimate. You might know it as Ultimate Frisbee. Also, the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance, also known as PADA. Tracy Berg is a longtime PADA member. She's also a girls coach at Haverford High School. She's played a national championship. She's won a world championship in Norway. Also with us, Rick Atkins. He's a high school coach. He also runs camps, and he's currently the program director for PADA. And Nick Hironet with us as well, and he's the captain of the Philadelphia Spinners Professional Ultimate Team, and he's been the captain for three seasons. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscowane. We want to hear from you. Let me get, looks like Phyllis from Lower Marion to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Phyllis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
To chime in, because I'm an ultimate mom. Both my children played ultimate in high school and continued playing in college. And I was so taken with the sport as well that I actually started writing about it, because our local newspaper wasn't covering it. They would cover all the other high school sports, and the ultimate teams were the ones winning the state championships. So I thought someone should write about it. But I would just like to say that my feeling is, I don't know why every school in the United States doesn't have an ultimate team, because it's the best sport for the kids with personal learning. The role of the spirit of the game rules cannot be underestimated. They require the kids to be responsible. They require the kids to to work things out with the person who's called their opponent, requires them to maintain perspective, that you can't have a good game unless the other team is playing well also. The players in Ultimate are in charge of the game. And for a teenager or a preteen to experience this is an incredible, incredible growing experience. And this is what the parents talk about while they're watching their kids play Ultimate.
Well, Phil, I appreciate the call. I think you said everything that our guests would want to say in response, but she thinks every school should have an Ultimate team. Do you disagree, Rick?
Oh, no, absolutely. Thank you for the unsolicited testimonial. What Phyllis says is absolutely true. And by the way, Phyllis has done some great things for the sport by writing about it, both in the local paper and in the Lawrence High School papers to get people out. You know, we had lots of kids coming out to play Ultimate at Lower Marion, and parents do love the sport.
And they do. And do parents behave themselves on the sidelines, or is that a whole other issue?
For the most part,
right. Sometimes you have to police the parents. I'm looking at USA Ultimate 10 Things You Should Know About Spirit of the Game. The Golden Rule: treat others as you would want to be treated. Control: a spirit of the game takes real effort. Heckling and taunting are different. I want to ask about that. How are heckling and taunting different, Tracy?
Well, heckling is usually amongst friends, I would say. So if we're playing in a PATA summer league, somebody will come along and heckle Rick, like, well, I haven't seen the hat come off yet, or
gotcha,
something like that. taunting is just mean-spirited, right, and we don't tolerate that at all.
How about professionally, Nick?
It's a similar idea. People love to heckle, especially in the stands. It is kind of an ultimate
talking
thing,
isn't it?
It's a little different. It's just fun spirited. So it's kind of making jokes with someone that you're usually friends with or know, or like to kind of have a good time with it. It's really not meant in a negative way.
A couple of other things you should know about spirit of the game: don't give as you got. What does that mean? Does anyone know? No. There is no eye for an eye. So I guess if something happens,
exactly,
no sort of revenge.
So if somebody calls a travel, so let's say you picked up your foot while you're throwing, you're not just going to call a travel on that person because they called a travel on you.
Be generous with praise. Does this all sound familiar? Impressions linger. Have fun. I mean, that's the spirit of the game.
Oh, yeah.
As you all live it and play it. Let me get, looks like Tracy from Erdenheim to join us. Hi, Tracy. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Nick. This is Tracy Gallagher from the Walter School of Philadelphia.
Hi. How are you?
And fine. I'm 52 years old, and I played PATA Yule League for the very first time in my life at 51 last year.
Good for you.
And it is just an amazing sport. The spirit of the game is certainly there, and although the Yule League is for beginners, half the team is usually very experienced players who are involved because they want to spread the joy of the game to people. I brought my 16-year-old son into it this year, and he loves it too. We play on the same team. And the Spinners players, I'm a gym teacher at the Walter School of Philadelphia, and the Spinners players, Nick Hironet came out, and Mike Baer came to my school with my middle schoolers and taught them how to play. And it's just, it's an amazing sport and an amazing group of people, both the players and PATA itself. It's just incredible.
Well,
best organization I've ever been involved in. And like I said, I'm 50, so I've been involved in a lot of organizations.
Two very satisfied customers, if I can say that. Tracy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Nick, anything you want to say in response?
Oh, I mean, I really appreciate the call. These clinics, I do remember that very well, and it was so much fun working with the young kids. And that's something that we do. I would say we almost are doing clinics and going out and into the community more than probably playing games. I mean, we have 10 games a season, but, you know, when we're not playing games, we're out there doing these clinics and trying to spread information and teach the sport.
You know, Rick, I'm thinking about how many games or sports can you have mothers and sons on the same team? I mean, how cool is that?
Oh, that's very cool. And in fact, one of the things I'm really looking forward to is my son is 15, and you have to be 16 in order to play PATA League. So I'm kind of hanging on to.
And how about at the upper end? I mean, until you collapse,
until you drop. Yeah,
until you drop.
I've been playing with my son for the last 4 years. Yeah.
Wow. I mean,
that's one reason why I keep playing, is to be able to play with him.
Does he keep you in shape then, I guess?
I think I keep him in shape. but what's great is to be on the field together and he'll yell, "Mom, Mom, Mom." And people are like, "What is this kid saying?" Because they're not used to having somebody yell "Mom" on the field.
We have an email from Mark. I was wondering if your guest could give advice on how to get involved in the sport. And how much training? Maybe I'll go back to you. I'll go back to you, Rick.
Okay, well, the generic answer would be PATA.org. You know, we run leagues throughout the year. As Tracy mentioned earlier, our Yule League is our best learning league over the summer. But there are other opportunities to play.
It sounds like more schools are picking it up, too.
Oh, absolutely. There's lots of schools. In the last few years, it's really blossomed, the number of schools that have teams.
I'm wondering, even playing professionally, how do you stay in shape? How do you train?
I mean, we play year-round. So although our season is only April to July, we play on other teams. We play on club teams like Tracy and Rick have. So it's really a year-round sport, and it's an amazing community. You know, you can go out and do workouts with people in the community. There's Philly workout email lists, and you really – it's very difficult not to find someone to go either play a pickup game with or work out with. So,
and what's the workout? Is it lifting weights or endurance, things like that, strength
training? It's just like most sports. You can do strength training in the gym. We definitely do a lot of agility workouts. We do a lot of sprint workouts, track workouts. So it's very much like other sports in that sense. There's always something mm-hmm. to do to improve.
How about for you, Tracy?
Right, so when women's ultimate started getting more and more competitive, we started working out a lot more, and with the PATA community, it's just really grown, and I've taken people to work out at the art museum stairs, and pretty much every other time I'm there, there'll be a group of PATA people there doing the same workout, so it's pretty cool.
Are we doing the Rocky thing up and down the stairs? Is that what you mean, or something more complicated than
that? It's more complicated, a lot of explosive jumping and sprinting up the stairs, and it's usually about like a 40-minute workout, but it's great to see other Frisbee players there. But normally a club team will have 4 to 6 hour practices on a weekend with a lot of conditioning during
4 to 6 hour practices?
Yes, crazy long practices.
That is crazy long.
The Edgley ball fields or just fields throughout Fairmount Park. And then during the week, they'll get together for a track workout or, like Nick said, an agility workout. So there's
a lot of prep.
Yes.
Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Tracy Berg and Rick Atkins and Nick Hironet. And we are talking about Ultimate, I should say Ultimate Frisbee, maybe a name that you understand. But it is a now professional sport. There's also the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance, or PADA. And we are going to take a short break, get back to our conversation with our guests, and also talk to folks on the telephone. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have some emails as well, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Lehigh MBA proudly supports WHYY. Designed for working professionals, the Lehigh MBA offers the option to attend core classes on campus or live online with programs that flex with your schedule. Continue to work and travel without missing class and stay connected with classmates and faculty from anywhere in the world. Conveniently located within commuting distance of Philadelphia and New York City. An open house will be held September 23rd at 5 p.m. at Roush Business Center. Information and event registration details are available at lehighmba.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Tim Arango, the Baghdad bureau chief for the New York Times. We'll talk about the rise of ISIS and the story he recently reported of an Iraqi soldier who's believed to be the only survivor of a massacre by ISIS of hundreds of Shiite soldiers. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Another international coalition takes on the crisis in the Middle East.
More than anything, I just want the American people to understand the nature of the threat and how we're going to deal with it, and to have confidence that we'll be able to deal with it.
Clarifying the missions against ISIS for a nation fatigued by war, the president in prime time. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Tracy Berg. She's a longtime PATA member, PATA standing for Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance. She is an ultimate player. She has won all sorts of leagues, and she also is a coach at, where are you a coach?
Haverford High School.
She's a girls coach there. Also with us, Rick Atkins, and he's been playing a long time as well. Many championships and summer leagues and world and national championships. He's currently the program director for PATA. And Nick Hironet is captain of the Philadelphia Spinners professional ultimate team. He's been captain for three seasons, and the phones just exploded at 1-888-477-9499. We have an email from Brittany who says, can they address how important mixed co-ed ultimate is? Can I toss it first to you, Tracy?
Well, most of our leagues are mixed co-ed. So that is... officially, it's four men and three women on the field at a time. And it's in PATA, it's just amazing. It's built this huge community. We have 48 teams in the summer that play, and that's about, 18 people on a team. And it's a very social thing. And then there's also the competitive side of mixed ultimate, which is also national and world.
And have you seen those games, Nick?
Yes, actually. Not playing in the professional, when the professional league ends, I'm actually playing on AMP, which is a Philadelphia co-ed team with USAU. And I would say Rick is absolutely right in it changes the techniques and how you play the game when you're throwing to both men and women. It adds another element. It can really improve your game in different ways, and I feel like it has. And it also is just... incredible how competitive co-ed teams can be. You don't really see that in other sports as much. You see men and you see women, but as a co-ed sport, ultimate is at such a high level. It's really amazing to see.
Anything you want to add to that, Rick?
No, again, disagree with that. Yeah, I think it is a big difference. Is you don't see national championships, and I really can't think of another co-ed sport that has a national championship.
We have an email from Beth that tells us about the people, the camaraderie, the relationships. Lots of fans out there, I think. But obviously, that's and I'm back to you, Tracy. That's also part of what this sport or this
right,
game
and
is
especially
about.
in the Philadelphia area. So one of our slogans is "Breed Ultimate." So lots of ultimate players have married each other and have had children. And
oh, you said breed, like breed?
Yes.
Okay.
grow.
Charming.
grow ultimate, which is, what we have done for the last 30 years. As a matter of fact, I was at a wedding this weekend of two ultimate players, and they had played on teams from all over the country, San Francisco, New York, and there were players from all over, and they all talked about PATA, that they've heard that we have the best leagues, and I think we do. I think it's special because of where we play in Fairmount Park, and having people like Rick that have been around forever, it's just been really amazing.
Move over, Match.com, right? let me get Rachel from media to join our conversation. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Rachel? Nope, we don't. I'm also looking at some words here, and I know there's, every sport has its lingo. Bullet pass, Callahan, cherry picker. I'm just going through the list here. Leapfrog, hospital pass. What's a hospital pass?
That's a good one.
Is that a good one? Go ahead.
Well, a hospital pass is kind of like a usually it's last minute kind of end of the count throw to get it out of their hands, and usually it's kind of like a floaty, dangerous kind of throw. I don't know if there's anything else to say.
Does that pretty much do it?
Right, you could get hurt trying to catch this throw.
Which, hence the name hospital.
Yeah.
How about virginity? Does anyone know this one? Similar to the word virginity, virginity relates to the first time someone bids.
Okay. So I guess it would be...
I don't even know what that means.
Probably a layout is what they're referring to, but the first time someone lays out for a disc, whether it's to catch it or to D it, it's definitely a huge part of the sport. You can watch a game and see layouts every other point.
I got you.
coaching high school girls, that's what they want to do, and they're so afraid to lay out, and the first time they do, it's just amazing, especially if they catch a Frisbee while doing it.
Let me try the phones again. We have, I believe, Rachel from Media joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just wanted to say thanks to all of you for, organizing the sport. I mean, my son is in sixth grade, and we just moved to the Philadelphia area, but in where we moved from, Columbus, Ohio, when he was in fourth grade, a dad who used to live in this area and learned Ultimate through those co-ed groups had an after-school activity and taught a bunch of kids to play Ultimate. And we didn't even know what it was, of course, before then. But now, out in the backyard, my sixth grader is throwing me the hammer, and I can't even begin to try to catch it. He's definitely made a better Frisbee player, Ultimate player out of me. And I just wanted to thank you all for all your efforts. And way out in Columbus, Ohio, it's having a far reach.
Well, I appreciate the call, Rachel. I'm sure our guests do as well. I'm looking at you, Rick. You have a very wide grin on your face.
Well, no, just hang in there, Rachel, catching those hammers. And ideally, you should be catching that with one hand on your hip.
Oh, is that how it goes?
Above your head, yes.
if you're really. But does Ultimate have its roots here in the Delaware Valley? In my intro, I said, in a sense, legend has it. This guy named Joel Silver, 1968, high school student in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Yeah, well, that was Maplewood, New Jersey, upstate northern New Jersey. And basically, they started playing there on a lit parking lot. And, just a very kind of, counterculture, recreational thing. Played the first game there. And then when they left their high school and went on to colleges, they started teams at colleges. And actually, an interesting anecdote is that the first intercollegiate Ultimate game was played between Rutgers and Princeton, the same two teams that played the first intercollegiate football game, and it was actually played on the same field, which had since been turned into a parking lot, and they first started playing the game on a parking lot. So
that's a short history there.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Let me get Ernie to join us. Ernie joining us from East Windsor, New Jersey. Hi, Ernie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to throw a shout out to the Mercer County Ultimate Disc League, which has been a summer league that's been going on since 1977. For some of your listeners that are in that area, they're always looking for players. I played for them for 6 years, and it was some of the best times of my life.
Oh, that's great. What did you like about it, Ernie?
It was, as a soccer player in high school, I really didn't have much to do once I got out of high school. I loved to run, and as you know, there's tons of running in Ultimate. So a lot of the soccer players from the area high schools wound up getting involved in this league because it was a similar level of running and activity and conditioning.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Does that make sense to you to go from soccer? I'm looking at you, Nick, to go from soccer to Ultimate?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to play soccer in high school also, and a lot of our players obviously come from other sports, soccer, tennis, pretty much anything, but soccer does translate pretty well. I mean, it's very much an endurance running game as well as being able to throw that burst, that sprint at any time also. So it's similar athletically.
Ernie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Do you think this should be an Olympic sport? I mean, is Ultimate at that level yet, Tracy?
Well, I believe it's been introduced into the World Games, and that's the one of the steps to getting into the Olympics. So there are a group of Ultimate people that are working towards that. And, yeah, I definitely think it should be in the Olympics.
And it is played worldwide, so it's not
Correct.
Just played here in America. I mean, do you see this as an Olympic sport, Rick?
I'd love to see it.
I know you'd love
to. And yeah, I do, because again, and the reason why I'm proud that I'm an Ultimate player and I'm proud of the sport is because I think it is different from other sports, the spirit of the game we were talking about earlier. And I think more people should know about that.
We have a question from Kevin. Is this Kevin? Oh, Kevin, our engineer, Kevin. Is there a preferred field type for Ultimate, either turf or grass? That's at you, Nick.
Preferred?
Does it matter?
Well, if I had a choice, perfectly cut grass would be wonderful.
Like a golf course, you mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Or a polo field.
Playing on turf is a good alternative to that, because a lot of times you can't play on the best fields around. There aren't that many, you know, depending on the area, you might not have really pristine fields. So turf is a decent alternative to that. But obviously the best to play on, like in other sports, would be, you know, perfect grass. It's much softer when
in
you
your
when
dreams,
you lay out.
Right, yeah. Right. How do you prepare for a big game?
How do we prepare? Well,
is there anything you do special for a big game?
I mean, we do have kind of scouting reports on other teams, and you know, our coaches go through watching game film, and we watch game film, preparing for what other teams are good at, and we do prepare that way, and then obviously physically as well. With, you know, what you're eating during the week, and then certain workouts that you do at certain times. So we do a lot of preparation.
What do you get? What's your skill? I mean, what are you good at when it comes to ultimate?
So I'm a handler, which was one of the guys Rick's talking about around the disc. So we're there for kind of the better throws, or, I mean, every guy on the field, guy or girl on the field, can throw, like Rick was saying. But the handlers are kind of the ones who are confident throwers and can reset the disc and kind of move it up the field pretty quickly.
Those are those shots that go on forever, right?
Yeah, right.
And how about you, Tracy, in terms of how you play?
I'm also a handler. We're all handlers here.
Oh, you are?
And, yeah, I've always been, you know, a thrower. And I'd just like to say that playing against Nick is very frustrating, because he's a very tricky handler.
Oh.
And he moves very quickly and has lots of crazy throws.
So. Oh, I mean, things that are hard to read. You sort
yes.
of don't know what he's doing.
He has a weird no-look throw, and
I'm sure you're not talking about Neil.
Now, how about for you, Rick? What's your specialty?
I'm a thrower, and one of the more important things, as I was talking about before, is throwing when you're being marked, because the marker's trying to take away a certain area of the field, and so I'm really good at being able to throw to where that marker's trying to deny me, and that's where the people tend to be open downfield.
And on a typical game, what's a typical score?
Actually, that's interesting. Yes, we didn't mention that. The games, the professional games are played to time, but most the club games are played 2 points. So a typical game would be to 15 with a halftime at 8.
Oh, and for professional, you played a time?
Yeah, so it's 10-minute quarters.
10-minute quarters, okay. Right. Just did the math there, 40 minutes, right? With a little time in between.
Yeah, there's time in between the quarters and the half. Yeah.
Let me get, looks like Gilly to join us from Brewery Town. Go ahead, Gilly.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi, Gilly.
Before I ask my question, I just want to say not only can you meet a partner playing PATA, but some of my best friends are I've met through PATA, so
great.
Thank you for that. I wondered if you could talk about PATA Yo, the youth outreach program.
Can you talk about that, Tracy?
I think Rick
or maybe
probably,
Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. PATA Yo is, you know, we believe in giving back to our community, so PATA Yo youth outreach. We go to rec centers throughout the city and introduce younger kids to the game of ultimate.
Yes, thanks for the call there, Gilly. We have also Mark from Upper Darby. What ages do their leagues cater to? I mean, it sounds like, is there an age? Back at you, Tracy.
Yeah, so with the PATA leagues, you have to be 16 years old or older. And I think there's a couple 60-year-old guys that are still playing. So 16 to 60. And then we have Rick does some work with middle school ultimate and also camps. So people under 16 have those opportunities.
You want to add to that?
We do run some youth leagues through PATA as well.
Let me get one more caller on. Looks like we have Tim from New Jersey joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I was a Frisbee enthusiast my entire life, and I just turned on the radio today. I never knew about this organization or this sport, and it's just I'm very, very excited about it. I guess I've been in the dark all these years. When I was a kid, I had a membership to the American Frisbee Association, that thing they had in the back of the Whammo package.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I'm in Atlantic City now. I lived in Philly all my life. I moved here in 99. I got above average skills when it comes to Frisbee playing. My catch and release is like super quick, behind the back.
Sounds like you're ready, Tim. You want to know how to get involved, right?
I want to know, yeah. Is there a website? And also, how can I get involved if there are fees involved?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm driving, so I got to take the answer off the air.
Okay, fair enough. Let me give Rick Atkins a chance to respond. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, well, again, PATA.org would be where most of the information would be located. We do run a summer league in Marlton, New Jersey. But what he's really got to look into is something we didn't touch on, is the largest ultimate tournament in the world that takes place on the beach in Wildwood the last weekend of July.
Oh.
So
mark it on your calendar,
It on your calendars, absolutely. And
Nick, we're almost out of time here. So the spinners season will start?
April.
In April.
Yep. April to July. We'll be ready to go, and we'll have hopefully have a lot of fans come out there.
And how did you do last year, or this year, I guess?
We missed the playoffs in the final game. We lost to DC, who eventually went on to win the championship.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Nick Hironet, captain of the Philadelphia Spinners Professional Ultimate Team. Nick, thanks for coming into Radio Times.
Thank you very
much
for having me.
You're very welcome. Rick Atkins is the program director for PATA. That's the Philadelphia Area Disc Alliance. Rick, thanks for joining us as well. And Tracy Berg, a longtime PATA member and ultimate player. Tracy, thanks for joining us as
well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out much more about this program. You can also download podcasts. You can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Quinn Lipson, our intern today. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, whose mom plays Ultimate with her, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.